Welcome, everyone, to the Within the Margin podcast, where we speak with authors and more about their books, their inspirations, and all the wonderful details in life. Today, we are speaking with Liesl Shu, author of Girl Dad. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Of course. No, thank you so much. So, as I always like to start off, what makes Liesl Liesl?
Well, for starters, I am a stay-at-home mom of three daughters. I'm here in San Antonio, Texas. My husband and I have been married for almost 11 years, and I've got a little bit of an interesting backstory that, you know, may set me apart from some authors out there writing children's books, and I'd love to share that with you guys and talk about how this little children's book that I wrote came to be. So I'm looking forward to speaking with you today.
Of course, yeah, we were talking about it before we hit the record button, and it's such a great point how, you know, you see the product of all your work and a lot of hard work and the story that you've gone through. But, you know, we would love to know more about, like, what got us to the point of Girl Dad?
Yeah, so I am actually in recovery. I'll be sober 9 years in May, and there was a long road of suffering that took place. I would say late into my teenage years, through the age of 30, I struggled with addiction and a lot of things that a lot of young girls go through. And back in the early 2000s, it was not necessarily talked about as much, and there weren't as many resources out there to help parents, kind of start to understand things like eating disorders and, you know, that eventually led into me picking up kind of toxic behaviors in a way to cope with that. And so I struggled with addiction for nearly over a decade in my 20s until the age of 30, where my husband and my parents basically said enough is enough. Everybody was kind of knew something was off, but not to the extent of the extreme struggle that I was going through and how far down the road I had gotten, and just, you know, I completely lost myself. And so in the spring of 2015, I went into a treatment facility for 4 months, followed by sober living for 3 months. And I have since been sober. And as grateful as I am for that, it's been a journey in and of itself as well. It is not, it's not an easy feat, but I've been fortunate enough to have really developed the tools for coping and have such a strong support system around me that this is something that it's given me so much perspective in life in general. And so coming out of that, we had our first child, Sawyer, when I was 32. And so a couple years into sobriety. And I would say that that's really when I found my purpose, you know, was motherhood.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful that I'm at a place where my kids will never have to see me as the person that I was prior to getting well. And so after Sawyer was born, we welcomed our second daughter, Piper, in the summer of 2018. And then Charlie came in the fall of 2021. So we've got three girls, 7, 5, and 2. It's a circus at our house.
That's awesome.
Every day. You know, it's, I'm just the, you know, we just kind of try to figure this out as we go. And so a little bit about the book. After our third daughter, Charlie, was born, my mom would be over often, you know, to help with that newborn stage. And she mentioned what a good dad my husband, Steven, is, and what a good girl dad, and how he reminds her of my dad and how he was with us raising my sister and brother and I. And so she was like, you should just do something, write something for him, call it the Girl Dad. You know, that'd be really cool. And I'm like, okay, I have a 2-month-old. that I'm trying to take
care of. All that free time.
Yeah. And on top of, you know, I've got three under four. So let me just get to that. But one night he was gone and I was just thinking about it. And I started typing in my phone. And as I wrote the text, I knew I had actual photos of him doing those activities with our girls or of me and my dad. And so the original concept, I had put together a photo book and I gave it to him for Christmas. And he's starting to read it out loud and then he gets quiet because, you know, the lump is getting into his throat and all the feels are happening. And that seemed to be the consensus across the board. And, you know, everybody was like, you should do something with this. This could be really cool. And I got with an illustrator and this is what has come from it, you know, a year and a half later. And so we can kind of go into, to, you know, the crux of everything. But the main thing that I like for my audience to know is that this book is a blessing and really has served as a vessel for me to kind of not only spread joy with this story and how happy it makes families, but also to share my personal story on how things came to be and that like life is not some shiny, perfect fairy tale. It's not what you see on the cover and what you see inside the book. This has not been, you know, my life forever. We all have struggles in life. And it's interesting to see how God works when you put in the work. So I've done a lot of talking. Now. I'll let you do some talking.
No. No one wants to hear from me. No, it's wonderful. Because when I was reading your book, again, having have a 6-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old daughter, and that bond, I know. I remember just like that. They do gravitate so much. It's hard to put into words, and what you did so eloquently in your book about that relationship. And I know of so much. I'm trying to find a way to make sure. Again, not have. I grew up with only a brother. So I didn't know, you know, there wasn't the big girl presence in our family. My mom is the boy mom. Okay. And so learning this, like learning that, how to, you know, to make them happy and realizing that you will do anything for them. Just being like, I am controlled by these little people and I'm perfectly okay with this.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful. Like, what do you think out of, you know, to talk about like the quality from your husband, Stephen, about what do you think what portrays the most in the book that, you know, makes him that girl dad, the ideal girl dad?
Well, you know, it's very kind of you to say. Again, we're trying to figure out the world of parenting just like everybody else. And interestingly enough, he only has a brother as well. So all these girls around is new for him, is new for him too. What I tried to do with this book is really kind of take you through the milestones of what it's like to raise a little girl, also just a child in general, and some of the uniqueness of that father-daughter bond and, just the importance of like being present. And that goes for fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, that goes for parents in general, I think. But I feel like we live in a society today where those role models that we as parents can be in the lives of our children is more important than ever, because there are external things in the world that children and adults are dealing with like never before. And so I think that, you know, that special bond that you can have with your children, be it opposite gender, you know, same gender, is just so important. And those memories that you can make, and it doesn't have to be anything extravagant. You know, I think back to, times with my dad, and a couple of the stories in here are actually taken from, situations with my dad and I. And so you just, you know, you develop those core memories over time, and it doesn't have to be, you know, some huge trip or some, but it's like, oh yeah, remember we used to paint daddy's fingernails on, you know, great days, or, you know, just, I don't know, something special and unique like that.
I think I currently have some remnants of some toenail polish on my fingers, on my toes at this moment.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe you have a friendship bracelet on, or who knows? Yeah.
Well, it's these, and it's one of the, I like how in your book you went from, you know, there's obviously the traditional girly things, and, you know, like, yes, there have been many a times where the nails have been out and we are painting fingernails, we are painting toenails. They are my 6-year-old, very good at it. My 2-year-old, it gets a little messy.
Sure.
It happens.
Yeah.
And, but then you also have the moments where, I love how you said the word present. Because I know with, you know, especially with, life is messy,
mm-hmm.
and there's so much going on, and our ability to, because those external factors that are affecting our kids are also affecting us. And it's incredible how you went through your story, and now you're able to be here, and you're able to be present with your child, your children, and right. be there. Like, so actually earlier this week, we had a soccer match with my daughter, and she scored a goal.
Uh-huh.
And she was so, she had been talking about, she wanted to score a goal, and she scored a goal. And the first thing she did is look over at us.
Oh yeah.
And like, we were right there, and you know, to be that moment, like, I don't think I will ever forget that moment in my life of just her looking and just with eyes wide open.
Yeah.
And it's those moments.
Yes. Yeah,
definitely. And I'm also just bragging that my daughter scored a goal.
Well, hey, you know what? Funny enough, you say that. So both of our two, we call them the big girls, they just started soccer back up this past Saturday too. And my young Piper, the 5-year-old, their team got drilled. We'll say that. But she scored a goal. And so the fact that they got blown out 13-2, she didn't even care. She did
Doesn't
not
matter.
Even care. But yeah, so, you know, and in the book, like, I was not the girly girl growing up. I was a tomboy. I played sports. My 7-year-old Sawyer, she would lean less girly, where Piper is all into, like, let's play dress up and do makeup. And she wants to be a spa lady when she grows up. And, you know, so yeah. It's just fun to see the different interests that, that your children take, and it'll change over the course of, you know, their upbringing. But, and back to being present, like, I'm just like probably every other parent out there. It's hard. We live in a world, our phones are constant, you know, that distraction is always there. But, I think it's more like just showing up, you know? And, you know, admitting to my kids, like, I'm not perfect, and they'll ask me questions and I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, well, you're supposed to know everything. And I'm like, oh no, I'm sorry, honey, but that's, why don't you learn it and then come teach me about it? Because mommies and daddies don't know everything either. So.
Yeah. No, I love that, because it's the, that. Being able to put aside everything, you know, for that moment where not giving them 90%, 80%, that full attention. I've also realized so much, if I'm ever like, you know, if I'm like texting something, be like, hey, I'm like trying to handle something. They sense that. They sense that.
Yes, they do.
Yes, you are physically there, but mentally you're not. Hey, dad, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
Where they expect nothing but full attention.
Yes. And it gets louder. And, you know, my 2-year-old, and this is when you go, okay, I got to set that aside. If I'm doing something on my phone, she'll go, no working, no talking, no talking. And I'm like, okay, boss baby, she's got a point. Like, I need to set this aside and pick it back up when, you know, it's appropriate. So.
Exactly. And if you think about some of those moments where, yes, would I like to get that email sent out? Would I like to finish it? But what is it going to, what's the risk? What's the gain here? If
sure.
I put this down and I sit in present with my child, that email being sent 30 minutes later is probably going to usually have no earthly effect to it. There are times that life does get in the way.
Yeah.
But Most of the time, it's not.
Can't wait.
You know.
Yeah.
If you just set those, if you set those parameters, I just being present, I just think that's a wonderful, because it's hard, especially with having a small company, you know, a small building company. That's something you really have to be very, and I feel like it has to be done very intentionally.
Sure.
You have to, you just can't, you know, naturally be present sometimes. You have to, especially with the phone always being connected, it has to be thrown away, put aside somewhere, and be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just love that. So how do you think your story of, you know, of going through the addiction, how do you feel? Obviously it was a very bad thing to have to go through.
Right.
And I'm sorry you ever had to go through that. What is the lesson that you feel like that can be brought, that everyone could learn from, that, you know, maybe doesn't have to have done in vain? Maybe what can we learn from that story?
I think, you know, kind of like I said, is that like we're all humans and everybody has their own personal struggle and their own personal journey. And, you know, social media, let's be real, it's a highlight reel. You know, it's, you're not necessarily seeing everybody's bad day or everybody's, you know, struggle, just, you know, set out there for, you know, everybody to see. And so for me, I like to get down to, you know, I want to know your story. Like, I want to know you personally, and I'm an open book. I'm not going to, like, you know, just, hey, let's go sit down at dinner. You want to hear my story? Like, if somebody asks, like, I just feel like it's what helps connect us as people. And, you know, I have a perspective on things in life that I wouldn't have had maybe prior to this. And yes, it was awful. Yes, I was absolutely miserable. I was struggling. All of the things, like, I don't wish this disease upon anyone, but it would not have made me who I am today had I not gone through it. So, in a way, there is a gratefulness that comes out of it. And there's also a duty to help others who are struggling. And that's one of my favorite things to do. If I can be of any source of help or support, then that's my job, you know, because it was so freely given to me. We are uniquely qualified to help others in need. This is not, you don't go to, you don't learn this in school. You go to the school of hard knocks to kind of learn, you know, what this looks like on the other side and the struggle and that. And so it's something that I'll be very open with my children about too, because there's a possibility that that gene's going to run in through one of them. But also, yeah, it's just having those lines of communication completely open, because back when I was going through things, it wasn't talked about. And that's to no fault of anyone, but, and it was my secret, and that secret kept me sick for a really long time.
So what would you, those open lines of communication, I remember me and my wife talk about this, where being able to, as they're growing up, you know, we have, you know, you can't help but see yourself and your kids.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, all the good stuff. And then all of a sudden you start seeing the bad stuff and you're like, oh no. And, yes, you know, and that can range from a variety of different things. You realize your kids have same fears as you do. And you're like, it's weird how sometimes it does seem, you know, in ways like you're in, like for addiction, that can be very genetic.
Sure.
And for a lot of things, there could be various different factors. But having those open lines of communication, and then again, also being present to be there, which is actually kind of required for that open communication, that right there can solve so many problems for especially so many young girls and so many young boys.
Yeah.
You know, as they're going through, you know, as they're possibly, you know, growing up and, you know, realizing what life is all about and understanding who they, you know, who God created them to be. And so they can become who he wants them to be.
Right.
And so with that, it sounded like, if you don't want to go into this topic, let me know. But when you're when your parents and your husband came to you,
mm-hmm.
even though you were obviously older, for me, it seems like that was, what did that mean to you that they came to you and were like, hey, I'm guessing there was love there. Like, can you kind of, you don't have to get into a lot of the details, but like, that's right. What did that mean to you?
Well, first of all, the love was tough love because I like the easier, softer way does not work with me. You have to hit me over the head with things, like punch me in the face with it before I finally get it. And without getting too much into the weeds, like I was ticked. I saw them walking up the steps to my front door and I was like, oh, here we, like the jig is up. This is not good. So I was mad, really out of my mind still for a long time. I mean, that many years into my addiction with pills, it didn't just, you know, clear up overnight. I had spent a week, excuse me, in detox, and my friend and I like to politely say that we were kidnapped. I mean, you show up unannounced. There's not a lot of time in between. You pack a bag and off you go. And so the love that was around it, I started to understand more as time went on. It was the hardest thing that I have ever been through in my life, trying to get sober and just being in treatment in general. But it's the best thing that ever happened to me. So, sometimes
it's, what advice would you give to somebody if they see a loved one or anybody too, that's going through what you're going through, they're starting to see the signs and you mm-hmm. know, what would you advise them to start proceeding that kind of conversation?
Glad you asked. It kind of varies for each person, but, you know, and a lot, I've talked to a lot of like friends or family who have had a loved one going through this. And one thing I'll say is that, if parents or a spouse or a partner or whoever is like the core family, if everybody's not on board, it's not going to work. If you have one outlier that the addict or the alcoholic can, you know,
run to
and that will continue to enable that behavior, it's not going to work. And unfortunately, I've seen it happen a lot. Being older, you know, being married, having children, like it gets a lot trickier because there's a lot more moving parts involved. Fortunately, my husband and I didn't have any kids yet. We were very fresh into our marriage, and the fact that our marriage survived is huge. There's a lot of people who don't, you know, and that is a huge testament to him and the love and willingness that he was able to see it through. But I would, it's always nice if you can reach out to somebody who is, you know, either in recovery, specializes in the field, and start asking questions and start kind of listing out your concerns and what does it look like and how long has it been going on, and start to ask those questions. It could be very, very obvious. It could not be. I mean, and there's so many resources out there. It kind of just depends. But more often than not, my suggestion is, if you're really far down the road, inpatient treatment is the way to go, in my own opinion. But that's not for everybody. So I would say everybody has to be on a united front.
Definitely.
To be able to have the support of a professional or somebody experienced in the field is always helpful, because we're able to explain in a manner that kind of starts to make sense. I don't know if I answered your question. I kind of went into circles there, but
no, you answered the question perfectly, because it's not a simple situation. It's right. Just like you mentioned, like life isn't life isn't, okay, we have this problem, so we're going to do this or this. Like, it's never like that. It's going to be, and then once the process starts, it's going to be hard. Like, as you said, like, you know, you're grateful that, you know, your marriage survived and everything, everyone was there for you and you were able to get treated. It's not always as simple as, hey, we have a problem. Okay. And then you just check a box and fix it. It's complicated, and having professional help, getting, you know, having a united family front. Cause I have noticed, like, you've even on simpler issues, you've noticed where if someone has a bad behavior, they go to the one person that lets them enable. We all know the enabler of people.
Right.
And that right there, you know, being able to identify that, and, you know, I really do appreciate you letting us into your world and understanding, sharing your story, because you're not the only one that's ever gone through this. And it's a story that, like you said, we weren't talking about it 20 years ago.
Right.
Or 10 years. Like, it's starting to become more, this is a issue that, you know, our society would like to solve.
Sure.
So, yeah. So thank you. Thank you again so much for sharing.
Yeah. Of course. And, you know, I think it, I'm also more, I don't know if in tune is the right word, but, when it comes to my kids as well, like if we start seeing certain behaviors, or like, I don't typically let things get kicked down the curb for very long. Ironically, my oldest, she was diagnosed with ADHD a few years ago, but we noticed stuff with her in the toddler years. And so like, if there's anything that seems off, I'm always ready to go take the advice of somebody that's a professional in that field to help my child. So yeah, it's just, again, we all go through our own things and struggles, and that makes us an expert in whatever field, you know, we went through. And so if my story can inspire hope in anyone, and then I've done my job, you know, me being able to help somebody else, is the greatest gift that I could ever give and receive, because, it reminds me of, you know, what I went through to get to where I am today.
That's so great. So how can people connect with you?
Yeah. So, social media, my Instagram is @thegirldadbook.com. Thegirldadbook.com is, my website, and, thegirldadbook@gmail. You just hit me up on any of those platforms and we'll start chatting. And, I am excited to say that, The Boy Mom will be coming out later this spring. So we'll get to, you know, bring the moms and the sons into this too. And yeah, I'm excited to see where this takes us. And as I mentioned earlier on, the original book was a photo book. And so something that is kind of fun and unique about this book is that every illustration, I don't know if you can see that, is taken from an actual photo of my husband doing those activities with our girls, or my dad and I.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So it's nostalgic and it's cute. Actually, Sawyer, when she was 5, this is her handwriting, the title. We
no
cleaned
way.
It up a little bit, but
a little bit here and there.
Yeah. But there's just some cool things in here, and it's sweet and it rhymes. It's easy to get through. It's not going to be a 30-minute bedtime book, you know, reading. And then on the back, towards the back, there's also a page where the kiddos can design their own page with their favorite family activities. And
very cool.
So it's sweet for kids, but there's a lot of adult messaging that'll hit you right in the heart. Oh, so
there's some kids' book, there's some children's books that you're just like, ooh. Like you close the door, you turn the light off, close the door. You're just like,
eyes are all.
That's how you know you got a good one.
Sure, this is one of.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I'm guessing it's available on Amazon.
Yes. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart. The easiest way, though, is to go to thegirldadbook.com, purchase direct. I will sign you a signed – I will send you a signed copy. Yeah, they're a great gift for a dad of one girl, a dad of all girls, or a daughter to give to her father. So I have adult friends who give it to their dads, and the dads just sob crying.
Oh,
it's just sweet and a unique gift. So,
Thank you. And thank you so much again for sharing your story and writing a wonderful book. Again, all the girl dads out there, you know, it's I forewarn as someone who read the book, it will get you a little bit.
Yes. It'll bring in all the feels.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us.
Yes. Thank you so much. Everybody have a blessed day. Thank you.
You as well.